Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big-time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd. On the Double with the Double S Express.
What's going on, everybody?
Hey!
Welcome to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally here with Sean Boyd, doing it a little bit of California style.
Man, Doug, you never cease to amaze, man. That lifted my spirits, especially after a horrific weekend in Northern California, man. I'm not talking about the rain, Sean Wally. It was a tough pill to swallow yesterday in the NFL.
Yeah, man. You know, the Raiders went out against the division rival Chiefs and all of a sudden drove down the field, scored touchdown, 7-0. Everybody in the black hole is thrilled. And this 4-1 start is looking like it's going to continue in the positive. And then I don't know what happened. So, Sean, you were there working the game. Let everybody know.
Man, well, outside of the rain just coming down like we were in the Pacific Northwest, that's one thing. I just think that Californians just aren't up to that. But the crowd, man, the crowd came out, which was great. But, as you had mentioned, the Raiders started out well. But there's always this sense, Sean Wally, that when Kansas City comes to town, that they are the new San Diego Chargers. And what I mean by that is when Jamaal Charles comes back, he just got back from his injury. And, you know, he's been a Raider killer over the past few years. It doesn't matter what he does, he gets into the end zone. And that's what LaDainian Tomlinson used to do. When San Diego came into town, we were guaranteed that he was going to get four touchdowns against the Raiders, whether he ran for four or he threw for two and ran for two or, man, whatever. He was going to get those touchdowns. And it's just an eerie feeling when Kansas City comes in because it's a divisional rival and these two teams hate each other. But, man, I thought the Oakland Raiders would definitely come out and play better. But, Sean, we're talking about a team that's tied for first right now in the AFC West in the Oakland Raiders, and they have the worst defense in the NFL. That's not a recipe for success.
Well, there's a guy that knows a lot about all things in the NFL as well as the NBA, play-by-play man extraordinaire for CBS Sports, the YES Network, many, many places. Ian Eagle, thanks for your time tonight.
Hey, guys. Nice to talk to you.
Hey, Ian, thanks for being on, man. And now, you were in Foxborough, I believe, yesterday. Is that correct?
Yes, I was. Electric atmosphere. Tom Brady's return to Foxborough. A lot of emotion. And he lives up to the billing. He was in complete command again. Second half was a tour de force for Brady. Patriots, somehow, guys, and you've been following this league a long time, you just expect a drop-off at some point, but somehow they remain the best team in the AFC and still the favorite to represent the conference in the Super Bowl. Amazing.
Now, getting a chance to see Tom Brady firsthand for you, I mean, is it personal? I mean, it just seems like, you know, after this four-game suspension, that he has been on a relentless tear, and it doesn't matter who he has on his football team.
You know, we had a chance to talk with him. We have the fortunate setup with the networks that you get time with the players, you get time with the head coach. That's part of the deal. It's part of the negotiation with the NFL. When the networks come in, you sit down for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, sometimes 20 minutes with four or five players and the head coach, coordinators. So we sit down with Brady, and the obvious question is, how is he going to handle the emotion of coming back to Gillette Stadium, all those fans that have unwavering love and support for him? And I thought his answer was very telling in that it really explains who he is. And while he said yes, of course, he was going to be amped up, but he's amped up for every game. And the fact of the matter is, he's fully engaged for the 3 hours that he plays. His preparation is meticulous. He leaves no stone unturned. He is incredibly thorough. In the 4 weeks that he was away from the team, couldn't practice, couldn't go to the facility, he was still putting himself in a position to train, and not just train by going and doing weights or laps. I mean, putting on a helmet, shoulder pads, having players come in, former players or guys that aren't quite good enough to be in the NFL, to go in and simulate hits on him. Obviously, it's not the same as getting hit by a 305-pound All-Pro, but he's putting himself through the same rigorous training that he would put himself through during the off-season. And while some people would look at this as, all right, he's resting his body, he's going to be fresher than usual, this guy, to me, he's really what you look for in a football player, the leadership skills and the way that the players on this team feed off of his energy. It's real, guys. I can tell you that, having done a number of Patriot games throughout my career, a number of Tom Brady games, it's the real thing. And I know there are some people that can be cynical about it. The guy's going to go down as one of the great all-time players, and rightfully so. He deserves it. He puts a lot into it.
Ian, what's more impressive, the talent of a Tom Brady or the coach, Bill Belichick, being able to withstand losing a future Hall of Famer in Brady and still get his guys to play hard and win the majority of their games?
Yeah, that's a great point. They went 3-1 without Brady. I believe it was the first time, we were checking on it, and I think we confirmed it, first time in NFL history where a team through 5 weeks in an NFL season had three quarterbacks throw for 400 or more yards over the course of the first 5 weeks of the season, which shows you that they were effective with all of the players that they put in there. Garoppolo, Brissett, who's now on IR with the injured thumb. The fact of the matter is, even in a year where Tom Brady went down with the Achilles injury, got hit by a Kansas City defender in week one, and was done for the season, Matt Cassel stepped in, and they still won 11 games that year. They didn't make the playoffs, but they won 11 games, and it shows you that Belichick, he doesn't win these games in the scenario that you would normally think, that it's complete game plan for the 1 week, which he does. He varies up the game plan. He's got an offensive coordinator in Josh McDaniels, a defensive coordinator in Matt Patricia that know exactly what he likes to do, and they push the right buttons. But I think the seed has been planted many years before this with the way that the culture has been formed, the way that the veteran players have taken the younger players under their wing and created this winning formula and winning attitude. It's impressive. I think Pittsburgh has a similar feeling to that. I think Seattle has created some of that to some degree. You're seeing that with Pete Carroll, where they lose players, but young guys come in and they understand what their job is and they understand how they have to do it based on the expectation level. Beyond that, Denver to some degree, Green Bay, we're starting to see that get a little bit shakier. It's hard in this league to maintain it, really hard. And those teams that I just mentioned have found a way to do it. It's based on stability, and it's based on the right attitude and the right philosophy.
Ian Eagle joining us here on the double. I'm sorry there. So, Ian, you're one of the hardest working people in the show biz. And, of course, you know, doing football and then, of course, basketball coming up. Last we talked out from a couple of weeks ago at the Super Bowl. Do you ever find time to rest?
Yeah. I mean, the reality is I recognize that there are a lot of people that would love to be in my position. So I don't take any of this stuff for granted. I'm a guy that gets the phone call and I say yes. I get excited about the assignment. I treat every assignment with the importance that it deserves, whether it's a local NBA broadcast or a national NFL broadcast or a radio broadcast, you name it. That's the way that I approach things. And I really enjoy the preparation. I enjoy everything that goes into the broadcast, the collaborative effort that it takes to put on a television broadcast. I like being a good teammate. I like working with people. And I try to set a good tone, a positive tone. When you walk into the broadcast booth, that's for me, the office. So you don't want to bring any negative energy into the office. My feeling is I've been really lucky. I've been doing the NBA now 23 years. I've been doing the NFL. It's my 20th year, 19 with CBS. I did the Jets prior to that. For me, this has been a dream come true and a joy. So I look at it as every day is a new adventure, and I can rest when I decide to retire one day.
Well, that sounds fantastic. Does this job feel like, you know, you were born to do this?
You know, my parents were in the entertainment industry, so my dad was a stand-up comedian. He was a commercial actor, a television actor. He was in a few movies. My mom was a singer and an actress, eventually making her way to Las Vegas. And I just knew at a young age that my parents were very encouraging. And when I mentioned to them that this is what I wanted to do, and I'm talking about 7 or 8 years old when I said it, they told me that this is what I would do then. That was the positive seed that they planted in me early, that I could do it. It empowered me to believe it. Whether or not I had any ability to do it, they had no idea, except that I had a will to do it. I had an interest in this business, and I went to college with the idea that this is what I would do. You get to Syracuse, where I attended, and now you realize that there are a bunch of other people that have an aptitude for it and also have a passion for it. And it turned out to be the right environment for me to be in a competitive scenario where others felt that they had the ability to one day do this as well. So we pushed one another. I was really, really fortunate to be at school at a time where Mike Tirico was also there, a bit older than me. I ended up working for him when he left college to be the local anchor at the CBS affiliate in Syracuse, eventually became his producer and worked with him on radio projects, TV projects. And it gave me an impetus and provided a catalyst for me to believe that this was something I could achieve. So I would be lying if I told you that I was interested in dentistry as a kid. This is all I wanted to do, man. This is all I ever wanted to do.
Well, you know, Ian, there is something in what you were saying as far as your parents telling you that this is the path and this is the way that you're going to go. I know that I have a 7-year-old daughter, and, you know, I was sitting in, my wife and I were sitting in church, and the pastor was saying that, you know, to take the word shy, if one of your kids uses the word shy, to train them out of that, because there's no reason for them to be shy. And so whenever my daughter feels like, you know, I can't do it, or I won't do it, we take that shyness out. And, man, you're looking at a young lady right now who is the boldest person that will speak in front of anybody, any place, anywhere. So what you're saying is spot on. And if you're destined to do it, and if you're put in the right direction, man, you're going to be great, such as yourself.
Yeah, that's really inspiring to hear, and it's so true, because you forget at such a young age how much those positive messages and positive words can lead you down the right path and finding the right formula. So, and not to get too deep, and I just always looked at it as a way to visualize your future and make it a reality. I never wavered from that. And it wasn't smooth sailing all the way. It wasn't always the way that it is today. You still got to work hard. You still got to get reps. And you have to make mistakes. But for me, it's been a combination of that and also trying to treat people the right way and put positive things into the world. That's really been my mindset for a long time. And more often than not, I think you get positive back when you put positive in.
That's the voice of Ian Eagle joining us here on The Double. Ian, what do you think the keys have been to you having the success you have had in play-by-play and announcing in the sports world?
Well, for me, I became a student of it very early, and I recognized at a young age that if I paid attention to the way others did it, not to say that I would copy them or mimic them, but I would incorporate some of the things that I liked. Marv Albert growing up in the New York area, was a huge influence. The style in which he called the game, the way he built the drama, the minimalist approach at times where you didn't have to over-talk, you could let the action speak for itself. So that was really important in creating my own style and finding my own voice, but also recognizing that others do it well, and there's a reason why that they've achieved what they've achieved. So if you can take a page out of their book and try to make it your own, that was really a big part of developing a style and developing a way and a presentation for this. Secondly, for me, I've always felt when I started on the play-by-play side, if I could make my color commentator the best that they could be, that would benefit the group. So no matter the personality, I never viewed it as they have to adjust to me. I viewed it the other way. I need to adjust to them. And different analysts bring different things to the table. Their experience and their wisdom that they've attained through the years, it's your job as a play-by-play person to uncork that and to make them comfortable and to make them feel at ease to do their job well. I think when you try to gauge what the viewer is looking for, they just want to feel comfortable in watching the game. And my whole mindset has been, can I be conversational while doing this job, but also be authoritative? I don't think people want to hear a robot. They don't want to hear a machine. But they also want to hear someone that is completely prepared and immersed in what they do. And they want to hear good banter. They want to hear people that get along. And that's what we're always drawn to. We would be drawn to that if we were sitting at a bar drinking a beer with a couple of buddies watching a game. Is it a good, lively conversation? And that's always been my viewpoint. Keep it moving, keep it rolling, but do it in a way that it is pleasing to the ear.
And at the ripe age of 25, which I'll note was only a few days ago, you landed the radio play-by-play job with the then New Jersey Nets, now Brooklyn Nets. What do you remember thinking and feeling you were offered that position?
Well, there's a whole long story that surrounds that. I really had no right to get that job. I was very late in the process. I read about the opening in a Phil Mushnick column in the New York Post back in 1994. I was working at WFAN Radio at the time. I was doing Jets pre- and post-game. So I had created a little bit of a name for myself in the New York area, but certainly didn't have a ton of experience at that point. And cold called the Nets because I saw the item in the paper that Howard David, the voice of the New Jersey Nets at the time, was not coming back, and said, why not? I'll pick up the phone and see what happens. I got the director of broadcasting on the phone, Amy Shear. I told her who I was and explained that I had seen the opening in the paper. She said that it was very late in the process. They were very close to naming a broadcaster. But if I could deliver a tape that day, she promised me that she would listen to it. The only tape I had at that point was play-by-play from my college days. I had graduated May of 1990. I had done the Syracuse Orangemen games on student radio, WAR, football, basketball, and lacrosse. So I rushed the tape over to New Jersey and East Rutherford. I was living in New York City at the time, drove it over there, handed it to her directly, and it was a tape of a Syracuse Seton Hall game that I had done at the Meadowlands. I thought maybe there was a little parallel there because the Nets played at the Meadowlands, and that was it. I left the office. I went back home. I went about my business and my normal job at WFAN Radio. She called me the next day and said that I had piqued their interest, and then asked me if I could give her something a bit more recent. She said, can you bring over a tape of some more recent play-by-play? And I said, oh, yeah, absolutely. And I hung up the phone and said to myself, I don't have anything more recent. That's it. That's the most recent stuff I have. I called a buddy of mine that worked at NBA Entertainment, and asked him if I could go into their offices, call a game off of a monitor, and if they could blend in some ambient noise, crowd noise, and make it sound as if I'm doing a game in an arena. And he said, yeah, I think we could do that. If he says no, that's it. It's over. The process is done. He says yes. I go in there. I call a Nick Net playoff game from 1994 off of a screen by myself. They blend in some ambient noise, some crowd noise. I run the tape over to the Nets, hand it over to Amy Shear. She tells me she'll get back to me. She plays it for her boss. The next day she calls. She says, my boss would like you to come in for an interview. Her boss was John Spoelstra, the president of the Nets, the dad of Miami Heat head coach Eric Spoelstra. And I meet with him 2 days later, and 1 week after that I'm told I have the job. And it happened very quickly, all within a nine-day period, from having no idea there was an opening to being the voice of the New Jersey Nets.
Wow.
It was pretty wild, and it changed the course of my career and changed the course of my life.
Wow. For those just tuning in, I am Eagle play-by-play announcer for CBS Sports. Joining us here on The Double. Man, that's amazing. So, you know, for Sean Wiley and myself, what you're telling us is we're on the right track, because, you know, anybody who aspires goes through, you know, a huge, you know, beginning phase, meaning that by any means necessary, you get the job done. And man, you improvised, you did the editing, you logged it, you sent it across the way, and here you are today. That's fantastic.
Yeah, and guys, the next year, the television voice, the Nets, ended up moving on from his job, and I got the TV job the next year with no television experience whatsoever, other than the fact that they trusted me and they believed in me, and that's a big part of it. There have to be people along the way that believe in your abilities, and those people, you have to make sure that you make them look good when they put that kind of trust in you. So as I look back on it, it was a very similar situation with CBS, where I was called in February of 1998 when their entire sports staff was in Nagano doing the Winter Olympics and they needed someone to do a college basketball game. February 7th, 1998, it happened to be the All-Star weekend in the NBA, and I was available because of that. If it wasn't NBA All-Star weekend, I wouldn't have been available. I was fortunate to get a game that weekend. It was Vanderbilt at Arkansas. It was a very nondescript game. Nobody would remember it except for me, because it was my first taste of it, and I ended up getting a call a week later to see if I was available to do the NCAA tournament, which I did. While I was doing the NCAA tournament out in Sacramento that year, 1998, CBS acquired the rights to the NFL, and because I think I made a good impression and I had been doing the Jets, they said, well, why not? This would be a pretty smooth transition to get you over on the football side, and that's been 19 years. So right place, right time, people believing in you, but also doing the right things. When those opportunities pop up, you better be ready for them. That's a really important part of the equation.
Iron Eagle, we could talk to you for hours. So many stories, so much insight. Thank you so much for your time tonight. And hey, Sean and I look forward to working with you again real soon in Seattle or down in the Bay.
Yeah, I look forward to it as well, guys. Months in the making. I'm glad we were able to finally make it happen. I look forward to joining you again down the road. Keep it up.
Hey, thanks, Iron. Appreciate it.
You got it. All the best.
There goes Iron Eagle, play-by-play extraordinaire. Man, so much knowledge and insight and everything he has seen and done over the years. So many doors have opened for him, and it's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, man, that story was so cool on how, you know, things just fell into place. Well, I won't say fell into place, because he had to do a lot of work. But when you have that determination, that grit, and you know that this is something that you need to do, you know, it happens for you. And so, you know, and we're all fortunate to have Iron Eagle to listen to him on the radio, on the television, you know, calling sports, man. And it's a great thing, Sean Wally.
And he's definitely got a great talent. Otherwise, all of these doors and all of these jobs that he's had for 10, 15, 20 years at the major networks, they wouldn't be there.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, one of the things that Ian was talking about is, as a play-by-play announcer, he wanted to make his color analyst look good. And that's not always, you know, that's not always the way when you're a play-by-play announcer. You know, most of the time the color analyst has to get on the play-by-play announcer's page. But anybody who knows Ian, he is speaking 100% the truth in that. He always, you can tell that he's involving it in having great conversation and banter. And that's what makes him a great announcer.
So how did I do, Sean? Did I make you feel comfortable? Was I on your page back in the day with the Thunder?
Yes, you did. And I just think that, you know, we're, as play-by-play and color analysts, I mean, there are certain things that go together like peanut butter and jelly, my friend. And that's us, man. Of course, you know, we had some mentors who we looked up to in, you know, Kevin Calabro and Marcus Johnson back in the day when they were calling for the Seattle Supersonics. And, you know, me looking at the color analyst position, it just made perfect sense. So when you and I came together, man, it flowed. Just flows, man. So, yes, you did make it easy.
It was that AM, PM, cold pop power.
Yeah. All the above. Oh, man, so it's great having Ian on there. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we return, we're going to have... Everybody get up.
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds. And since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that went away. And I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So, guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400, the safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to andro400.com. andro400.com.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express, Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally here with Sean Boyd, and let's go back out to the holysmokednuts.com phone line and welcome in big-time guest number two, and that is Crystal Clark of Rock, Paper, Scissors. Crystal, thanks for your time tonight.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited, and I'm honored to be on air with you guys tonight.
Well, you know, we're honored and excited as well, Crystal, and, you know, there are some great things that you have been doing, and you've been championing here over the past as of recent, actually, and that is rock, paper, scissors. Give our listeners an idea on what rock, paper, scissors is involved with and what it entails.
Yes, and first I want to just kind of break it down for you, because I know when people hear the name rock, paper, scissors, they're like, that's unique. Well, what's that? Well, we feel that it's powerful and that the words that we put behind it carry a lot of weight of freedom and creates an overcoming community. So our heart and our mission is it's rock, no matter what you throw at me. Paper, no matter how you crumble me. Scissors, no matter how you cut me, I'm an overcomer. And we give a voice to those that have been silenced by any form of sexual, emotional, physical abuse. We also bring awareness to human trafficking as well as prevention and tackle with fear and insecurity.
Wow. So, you know, and these are amazing things. And so, you know, one of the reasons for having you here on The Double is because this is an important time of the year. There are a lot of organizations that are having awareness campaigns. And for one, Rock, Paper, Scissors is taking on domestic violence. And as you had mentioned, sexual abuse. And, you know, it's something that's been important to me. And so, you know, with my wife, Denise, it was something
she's
that she
amazing.
Came to me.
I love her. Hi, Denise.
And I'm sure that she's jumping up. She's probably jumping up and down going, hey, girl, I got. But, you know, it's something that she came to me with. And it was a very serious subject. And, you know, she asked me to support. And I said, well, sure, I would support. And what we're doing now, and I want you to explain this to our listeners. What we're doing now for Awareness Month is we're wearing these Band-Aids. Now, you can wear a Band-Aid anywhere you want, but for me right now, Crystal, I'm telling you, I've got it on my face, on my left cheek, as we're speaking right now. So
I'm
definitely excited about it.
So we created, our team's pretty amazing, and we have a group of people that come together effortlessly that are volunteers. There's no paid staff, just a heart. Or either these are their personal stories or they have a passion for people. And we wanted to make sure that we took this opportunity. We create awareness all the time, but we knew that in the month of October, we had to make some noise. And we had to be able to spark a conversation around domestic violence. And I think sometimes people think that domestic violence is just, you know, a man hitting a woman. And no, it can be us ladies hitting a man. And it is never okay, whichever way it's rolling. And so we wanted to spark a conversation by having people wear a Band-Aid in a visible area. And that's just basically saying, I'm taking a stand. I'm taking a stand that if I have anger, if I have control issues, my own self, I'm going to seek help. I'm not going to hide this. I'm not going to mask this anymore. I'm going to do better to get healthy and get whole. And if I have a sister or a family member, or if it's been me and I've been able to beat domestic violence and overcome it, I was strong enough to get out of a bad situation, I am standing strong, you know, for those that can't, or to just show my own personal freedom that I was able to escape. So we are just super passionate about it. I don't take the fight or the cause lightly by any means. And we just hope that we're making a difference out there.
And Crystal, how have people responded, both men and women, to branch out and actually talk about these issues and maybe ask for help?
Well, personally, just today alone, I had three individuals reach out, and one decided that she's tired of her eyes getting blacked, and she's tired of making excuses for the fact that the emotional abuse has been so heavy on her that she's allowed herself to believe the lies that have been told to her. And she thinks this is all that she's worth at this point in time. And so for me to have someone reach out just today and all through the campaign, it's worth it. If it was for that one person, for their freedom, for their bloodline, for their children, it's worth it. And so I feel like we're definitely, embarking on some great territory, and I don't feel this is something that I know we're going to continuously do that we were able to create in birth. And we are, one of my girlfriends that is on the East Coast, she's in Washington, D.C. On Saturday, her husband said, I have a surprise for you. She had no clue what it was. She thought he was taking her to the movies or something. he had gathered 70 men in the city, like in the heart, in the hood, in the roughest area of Washington, D.C., and had a cookout, and they had Band-Aids on. Grabbed the councilman and some of his mentees, and when I saw that, and some of them had their sons out there, I said, you're making them aware, and you're teaching them right now that just as cool as it is to hit a baseball or to throw a football, that it's just that cool to be protective of your sister, of your words, of, you know, of the things that you do in your actions.
Well, that's amazing. It's great to be able to reach out like that. And how can people find you if they want to donate their time, some money to the cause, and get active and help?
Well, we are on all forms of social media. We have a website. We are a 501c3. We are based out of Washington State, but we have national presence, and we also have ambassadors and representatives that are in different states. So, for example, I believe that you guys are based out of the California area, so we have a lead there. You can always just email us. Go to our website, and it's www.rockpaperscissorsfoundation.org. And drop us an email there. We also have social media, Facebook, which is Rock, Paper, Scissors Foundation. And that page is a page that's a community of overcomers. Or maybe they haven't decided to overcome yet. But it's just an empowering page where people are telling their stories. And we are also giving statistics, empowerment, love, encouragement. And anyone is welcome to join us there. We're on Instagram at Rock, Paper, Scissors Foundation. I think we get to do some pretty cool things in the community, so we like to post those pictures and keep it kind of fun. And then we're on Twitter at Rock, Paper, Scissors 1, and that's just Rock, Paper, Scissors, as in the S-C-I-S, number one.
Okay. All right. Crystal Clark. Founder of Rock, Paper, Scissors Foundation, joining us here on The Double. Now, Crystal, the reason why, you know, we have you on the show is because there is a growing issue around the world. And you had mentioned, of course, that it's not just, you know, with domestic violence, not just men that abuse women, it's women that abuse men. But one of the things that's been brought to light in sports, especially over the past couple of years, a big story about Ray Rice hitting his wife, and it became, you know, more of a focal point. I found out a couple of statistics that I just want to share with you as far as professional athletes are concerned. And maybe you can verify this or not, but out of 100,000 athletes, professional athletes, they said the NFL and the NBA have about 22,000 domestic violence cases in each of those sports. And that is a staggering number. And so I wanted to have you on the show so that you could bring forth, you know, the information and the awareness for a lot of our listeners who, you know, love their sports fans. And of course, talking with you, you're a Seattle Seahawks fan, and you love Russell Wilson
and number three.
RW3. And he seems to be a great role model for, you know, the young men and women in society. But these numbers are something that need to be brought forth because there is an issue and we need to deal with it.
Absolutely. And just listening to those numbers alone, I mean, my goodness. And I think that when I start thinking about this, I'd rather say shame off of you if you want to get help, right? If we're repeating cycles, there has to come a point that we decide we're going to be our own personal best and that we want to be healthy. And so I think that it's awesome to rally around our, you know, our teams and our different athletes that play. And yes, we should support them, but we should also create an atmosphere where if they need help or if they're doing these things, that we make sure that we come alongside of them and say, we know that you're human too. We could respect you more if you can do the right things on and off the field. I mean, to me, that's kind of, we don't want to create a situation where we place these people so high that they're no earthly good. It's almost like a standard that they can't keep up with. And I just feel that I don't know why I feel really strong tonight, even about the people that have overcome.
Yes.
Sometimes we do domestic violence and we say, oh, you know, this person did this and they did this, but how about they stopped using their hands that way? So we don't need to, we have to have that kind of that grace for them and just kind of be able to let people know that we know that each person's issues look good and different and we're not justifying them, but just human, just be kind to people. It's real simple. Show love. I mean, if we look at everything that's going on in the world now, there's so many epidemics, and really the only key and answer is going to be love. It's not going to be opinions. It's not going to be who's right or wrong. It's going to be love. And so I don't know if that answers your question, but
yeah,
that's kind of, you know, what I feel on my heart.
That's good. That's good. So, Crystal, for our listeners who are listening in on this show, male or female, who might have had some type of or form of domestic violence in their life, who's probably afraid to step out, probably afraid to say something, what can you say to them right now?
What I can say to them, him or her, shame off of you. It's not worth it. Your freedom is never worth you hiding. When you're masked, you can never be your real self. It's okay. Maybe you can't trust everyone, but there's a safe spot. Reach out to us if you need to. Reach out to, you know, a counselor, there's a domestic hotline, the local police office, whatever you need to do. But really consider where you're at and if this is going to make you happy for the rest of your life. We know that sometimes people that are in domestic violence situations, they never wake up the next day. So it's okay that you've stayed this long, but just decide that you're done.
Now, Crystal, what happens? What are the steps that you take if somebody does reach out and say, hey, I'm being verbally abused or I'm being physically abused or all of the above?
Well, for example, if someone reached out and had a domestic violence situation, obviously we want to get them in a safe place. And sometimes it's happening within the home. And so if they can create a community around them that knows what's going on, then someone can get them to the local domestic violence shelter or a resource that can help them. The police, obviously there's restraining orders and things of that nature. The young lady that called today, for example, she was at work and she immediately after work was going to go to the shelter and just go ahead and take her and her kids there and then get counseling there. And then as well, not only the counseling, but then we're going to get law enforcement involved so that she could get a restraining order. And sometimes in these situations, you even have to move out of state. One of our girls had to move out of state because he was threatening her and bullying her. So, and those are some things that happen, the intimidation with domestic violence, that she was nervous and she was scared. She was freaking out. She didn't know what to do because every time she turned around, he was there. You may have to come off of social media so that you're not tracked. You're going to have to do some drastic things. Yes, you may have to change your phone number. I've had people say, I don't want to change my number. Well, you have to. You have to start over so that you can protect yourself until you know that you're safe and that your children are safe if you have children.
Well, Crystal, your favorite quarterback in Seattle has his pass the peace. And I think that a lot of the abusers could use some of that right now as well.
Oh, I'm sorry. Say that one more time, Sean. I didn't hear you. I heard you say pass the peace, but I didn't get the rest.
Yeah, I just think that a lot of these abusers could use some pass the peace that Russell Wilson, your favorite quarterback, likes to spread as well.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? He's so amazing. But if you peace and love, the same thing, right? Like, we just have to have... We have to be able to not let it be the pink elephant in the room anymore. And we have to make sure that we're helping people find value in themselves and not shaming them. Because if we're shaming them every 2 minutes, they're not going to want to talk. If they felt good about themselves, they wouldn't allow themselves to stay in the situation. And sometimes it is safety safety related. So we just want to look at people with the eyes of love and hope and not so much judgment.
Crystal Clark doing great things with the Rock Paper Scissors Foundation. You can find out more information and help out at rockpaperscissorsfoundation.org. Crystal, thanks so much for your time, your insight, and please keep up the great work. And everybody out there, don't forget your Band-Aid.
That's right.
I have mine on now. Guys, thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate having you on, and this is a great time and a great organization. And anything that I can do, I'm definitely going to step up and do it. And, you know, I've got my as I said, I have my Band-Aid on as well. And I'm sure, Sean Wally, I know that we've accepted this challenge. And, you know, I just love you. And I thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, guys. Have a great evening.
There goes Crystal Clark doing great things in the Puget Sound region, but reaching many parts of the country and hopefully the globe.
Yeah, and man, I can't begin to tell you how excited I am about, you know, this organization and the things that are going on. And it is a growing problem that I had mentioned before. Those numbers that I told you, Sean Wally, it are amazing. The amounts of cases that domestic violence has taken place. And don't get me wrong, folks who are listening, love and support our teams and our athletes, and that goes without saying. But with that being said, you know, there are some things that, you know, maybe, you know, our favorite athletes need to be held accountable for. And so with organizations like the Rock Paper Scissors Foundation, you know, it can bring a light to this particular issue and make things better, you know, for all of us as human beings.
Well, Sean, apparently somebody has called in to talk to the Double S Express. Let's go see what Patrick has to say tonight. Patrick, what's going on?
Back on the show, Crystal gave a warm, educated announcement about that cause. I heard a little bit of it, and why not? I could use a Band-Aid for right now, especially how bad my fantasy team took edge this week. So, you know, I wonder if you can send something over here for myself, for my fantasy league team. Golly.
Well, you know, I like how, hey, Pat, welcome to the show, man. I love the pivot, man. I love that. Yeah, we're Rock, Paper, Scissors organization right into fantasy. Hey, I feel for you, man. It, just like me, you know, maybe I should put another Band-Aid on because I didn't have such a great, I didn't have a great weekend either. But, you know, my co-host, Sean Wally, he seems to have had a great weekend in fantasy. But, yeah. I took some lumps, yeah. Definitely.
Oh yeah, most definitely. And then, you know, let's. I hope to have some extra ones for those Atlanta Falcons fans too that are still licking their wounds, flying after that TI or not TI that is yet to be the question. And I was waiting to get on the show to hear exactly from both of the Sean's based upon that, because I was jawjacking all day at work, and I came home, and I said, I can't wait. You guys tune into BBS Radio. We can hear this live on air, so hopefully my friends and everybody that I've told to get on and download, I hope they're on right now, to listen to this so they can take advantage, because this is an opportunity for, you know, people to be heard like today. So what was your take on that? First, Mr. Wally, please give me an explanation.
Well, yeah. I tell you what, it was crazy how, for three of the four quarters, the Seahawks dominated the Falcons in the number one offense in the league. But for whatever reason, the adjustments Dan Quinn and his coaching staff made on the Falcons sideline, they worked to a T. Now, sure, you can blame some of that on the either miscommunication in Seattle's secondary or somebody running the wrong type of defensive scheme at the wrong time, causing, I know you saw it, Patrick, Sean, I know you were busy. I don't know if you saw the highlights, but Sherman just was so passionate and livid on the sidelines, and the entire team rallied around him. They're jumping up and down, hooting and hollering, getting his mind right, and not letting him just stew. And it was something that many people haven't seen in years, if ever. So that was a sight to see for sure. But as for the PI, not PI, Could it have been called? Yes. There was also one in the first half on Jermaine Kearse that was not called, as he was around the 2-yard line. So it goes both ways. And at the very start of that play, there was illegal hands to the face as Julio tried to knock Richard into tomorrow by hitting his helmet with his hand. So there's always calls that don't get called or calls that do get called and maybe they shouldn't have. And this one went in Seattle's favor. And as Rondé Barber said, the analyst on the Fox broadcast, that play could have been called, but guess what? The Falcons had the entire quarter, and they put up 0 points. Mr. Boyd, I turn it to you.
Wow. So, you know, I kind of see it a little different. And, of course, I'm sure that's why, Pat, you called in. And you know, there are some things that I agree with as far as the Seattle Seahawks dominating that football game for three quarters. Of course, the third quarter, the Atlanta Falcons woke up, scored 21 points, which, you know, is a question mark. It could be a question mark on the defense, but I would probably err on the side of saying that Dan Quinn knows his former players. And it wasn't anything that Richard Sherman wasn't doing wrong. It's just that I believe that Dan Quinn knows Richard Sherman's tendencies enough to expose them. Now, to get to the actual play at hand, the call or no call, it's just one of those things. I believe in the court of public opinion has said enough that most of the people that have seen that play saw that and said, man, where is the flag? I mean, that's the whole reason why we're talking about this today is why wasn't there a pass interference call? Now, when you go back and take a look at the play in its entirety, which I love my Seattle Seahawks fans for putting on Facebook the beginning of the play and explaining it from beginning to end on how Julio Jones smacked Richard Sherman in the head. I love that part because that's the part in the Pacific Northwest that vindicates the actual play that happened when the ball was in the air, that Richard Sherman had his hand, his arm on Julio Jones's arm, and there was which was the reason why Julio Jones could only lift up one hand. Now, I don't know what the official saw. Maybe the official said, well, hey, Julio Jones smacked him in the head, and maybe we'll just hold the flag. And that could very well be the case. What I would like is, like the NFL does on most cases, to where it's somebody, one of the officials calls in and says, hey, man, this was a call or a no call. We haven't really heard that yet. But from my viewpoint, from the actual play, it looked like it was pass interference on Richard Sherman. Now, that doesn't mean that if that play was called that the Atlanta Falcons go on to score because they still have Seattle Seahawks have to still play defense. But on that particular case, in my opinion, the pass interference flag should have been thrown out.
Right? I believe it's my turn. So would you agree then?
What say you, Pat?
well, let's just, would it be fair to say, and I agree with both points that have been made, and that's kind of what I've heard earlier today, but would it be fair to agree, since the first three quarters, especially those, there was two calls actually on Jermaine Kearse that wasn't called, and they just went by completely. But wouldn't it be fair to say that the refs were just letting these wide receivers play the game?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Most definitely. Just like Sean had mentioned, the Jermaine Kearse play in the first half. I mean, and that's football. So you can't really dictate it on one specific play. Because that play didn't lose the game for the Atlanta Falcons. Their execution for the whole game is what lost the game for them. It's just that when that one play happened, where the pass interference should have been called, of course we want to magnify it. And that's why I gave the disclaimer that we don't know if the Atlanta Falcons would have scored a touchdown anyways. It's just something that we're bringing up. But, yeah, you're right, Pat.
Oh, yeah. Well, that answers a lot of questions right there. And I hope my friends that were able to tune in that listened, I hope they were still able to stay on because that's something that I just wanted to put officially on the air since we don't have to use social media like Facebook to get our answers. I said we're going to use a real qualified network that's going to get our voices heard, and you guys can be able to call in as well. I hopefully they're on the line waiting to call, but other than that, that was my only concern for today, and I hope the answers were answered for my friends. It was answered for me, because at the end of the day, I just took it as, you know, the refs were letting these guys just play the game, and why decided on that one play when it's been physical the whole game? So that's my take. I'm excited for it. I need a Band-Aid, though, because my fantasy team has laid an egg, and I lost to a team that shouldn't even be in my league. So I'm going to lick my wounds and eat a chili dog and have a good night. And thanks for having me on the call.
Hey, Pat, you're one of our callers that calls in often. Man, I hope things go well on your fantasy in the near future. But, man, don't hesitate to give us a call here on the double.
Right on. Take care, guys.
All right, take care.
Thanks for listening, Pat.
Pat in Tacoma. Man, you know, whenever Pat calls in on the show, man, you never know, man. You got to be ready. So he puts us on the spot, Sean Wally. Go figure.
Hey, apparently he put some credence into our thoughts, so that's good. And if he's bringing listeners, bringing friends to the show to listen, more power to him.
No doubt about it, man. Well, hey, man, it's been a great show. Man, we've had two awesome guests, Mr. Wally. Go ahead and give our listeners a rundown on who we had on the show.
Love the insight from a guy that has been a coworker of ours a handful of times with CBS Sports, and that is play-by-play man Ian Eagle, not only with CBS for NFL, NCAA, but also with the YES Network in New York on Brooklyn Nets NBA games. That guy has so many stories, so much knowledge. Can't wait to get him back on the show. So much to talk about. And, of course, Crystal Clark, the founder of Rock, Paper, Scissors, rockpaperscissorsfoundation.org.
Man, two awesome people, two awesome guests here on the double. And as you had mentioned, you know, with you and I working with Ian, there's none that's more genuine and passionate in what he does as far as his line of work is concerned as a play-by-play announcer. Of course, doing double duties on television and radio, of course, with CBS Sports and Westwood One on radio Thursday Night Football. And, of course, he does some great things with the NCAA and for basketball, and great having Ian on the show. And of course, Crystal Clark, founder of Rock, Paper, Scissors Foundation, just a wonderful, wonderful woman with a passionate foundation, doing some great things, putting a spotlight onto a serious issue in domestic violence. And so two awesome guests, Sean Wally. Man, where does the time go? I tell you, man, it's
flies
been awesome.
When you're having fun.
It does fly when you're having fun. Hopefully this weekend there will be great results for the both of us. My goodness, the Raiders have to get themselves back to their winning ways. I know that it's just one game, and I can say that they're still in first place, but man, what I'd mentioned before, being the last, you know, the worst defense in the NFL, it's got to get better for a Jack Del Rio, Ken Norton Jr. defensive-laden football team. And so I'm hoping
that's
good.
On Sunday?
Oh, my gosh. I want to say Jacksonville, but I could be wrong on that one. They're away, and so I will be in Santa Clara with the 49ers this weekend. And so you know, that's going to be a lot of fun. You know how I love to go to Santa Clara.
Colin Kaepernick making his second straight start.
Yes, and so it is.
Horrible 49ers.
And, yes, the Raiders are playing the Jacksonville Jaguars, so that's going to be a reunion, of course, for one Jack Del Rio. But, yeah, yours truly, I will be in Santa Clara having fun as the Tampa Bay Buccaneers come into town, and that will be on Fox Sports.
The entire nation will get to watch the Seahawks take on the Cardinals
Sunday night.
Sunday night.
NBC.
In America.
Now, will you be working that one this weekend?
Considering it's in Arizona, that's a no.
Oh, okay. My goodness. I did not. I was I wasn't looking. So yeah, in Arizona, the Seattle Seahawks, Arizona Cardinals going to battle. Of course, the Cardinals taking care of business as we speak, which is the reason for my demise, Sean Wally, in my fantasy league. My players just aren't doing what they're supposed to do.
Those Redbirds down in there in Glendale get three in a row, back to back to back, nationally televised NFL games, ending next week hosting Seattle.
Well, you know, they were the team last year, and I know that the Carolina Panthers, you know, had a great run, but Arizona was considered the team, and you know, which is the reason why I believe they have such a favorable television schedule. But you have to combine Seattle with that. So, you know, it's not like it's just Arizona. They're looking at the teams that they're playing. Maybe they thought this Jets game was going to be a good game. I don't know. But Seattle, Arizona is always going to be a great game, especially as a divisional rival.
All right, Sean, I will leave you with this. Do you know which quarterback in the National Football League has the worst completion percentage in 2016?
The worst completion percentage.
Which starting NFL quarterback?
Well, does that include Blaine Gabbert? Because he's no longer a starter.
It does.
Well, I'm going with Blaine Gabbert.
I know you're sitting down because you're going to need to be, because this will blow you away. The quarterback with the worst completion percentage so far in 2016, Aaron Rodgers and his discount double check.
Whoa, that bad man Aaron Rodgers, huh?
I heard that today and I about fell over. Wait, what?
You know, I did see something on one of the networks to where they were comparing Aaron Rodgers to Johnny Manziel, and that says it all right there. So it might have been something similar as far as running the numbers, you know, his numbers to Johnny Manziel's. But, man, that's incredible. Aaron Rodgers having that type of a season. Huh. I'm still going with Blaine Gabbert as the worst quarterback, though.
No doubt, for sure. Mr. Boyd, it's been fun. Take us home.
Well, man, it's been a great show. And, of course, you can tune in to On the Double every Monday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Here on the World Wide Web, you can go to www.bbsradio.com/DSX, or you can go to your smartphone, download the app BBS Radio, and click on Station 2 to listen to us live, or you can go online to bbsradio.com/DSX to listen to all our archives and great guests, big time from all around the world. Like we always say here on the double, you're not in the game unless you take that shot. And when you take that shot, we hope that it hits nothing but the bottom of the net. This has been a DSX LLC production. For Sean Wally in Sela, Washington, yours truly in the EG Studios in Elk Grove, California, Doug Newsom in Paradise, California. You have been listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for some more great sports talk and big-time guests. On the Double with the Double S Express.